Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, April 20th, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, "La Hood Faces Combative, Divided Town Hall Crowd," by Derek Bay. Washington. U.S. Representative Darren La Hood found a combative but divided crowd Wednesday at his first town hall meeting since the election of President Donald Trump. The Dunlap Republican often sparred with questioners in a partisan atmosphere in the Performing Arts Center of Five Points, Washington. Many asked him to commit to political positions, booed his answers, and cheered for questions reflecting liberal priorities. Others, however, cheered his support for agriculture and national defense and booed a questioner who suggested the entire crowd opposed abortion. "I'm going to be passionate about what I believe in and let the voters decide," he said. The most frequent topic was health care, and many questioners disagreed with La Hood's assessment that the Affordable Care Act will collapse and asked him to support a single-payer, universal health care plan. "Pre-existing conditions is an area that we need to protect, and I'm supportive of that. I also think being able to keep your kids on their parents' insurance is a good thing until 25 or 26. I commit to you that keeping those two things, whatever we vote for, has to be part of that," he said. Questioners were allowed to ask follow-up questions, which helped one man press La Hood to name bills supported by Trump and the Republican leadership that he voted against. La Hood repeated some areas where he disagrees with the president, including whether Trump should release his tax returns, trade policy, banning refugees, and funding for agriculture, the environment, and public broadcasting. He didn't name a bill, however, after being pressed to. "I think it's obvious by now that you have no intention of answering my question," the man said, walking away from the microphone. La Hood also stopped short of pledging to introduce or support a bill requiring Trump to release his tax returns, though he promised to support a bill requiring future presidential candidates to do so, or requiring Trump to divest from his business empire to avoid potential conflicts of interest. La Hood said he supports congressional investigations into Trump's ties to Russia, but he said any further action should wait until those investigations finish. La Hood promised frequently to review the available evidence and then decide his position on certain issues, including climate change. He also told the crowd voters knew his positions and Trump's and elected them regardless. After a question about whether La Hood's Catholic faith is a valid reason for him to attempt to restrict abortion access, Sarah Breeden of Normal told him, "Your religion does not belong in my body." La Hood also repeated his commitment to treating campaign spending as free speech, as decided by the U.S. Supreme Court, to a recent vote that gave Internet service providers more freedom to sell users' data, and to supporting Trump's military action against Syria. La Hood said he chose to hold the event in Washington because it's central to the 18th Congressional District, which includes parts of Bloomington Normal, Peoria, and Quincy, and Five Points, Washington was a spacious venue. La Hood is the second federal lawmaker to schedule a town hall meeting this spring in central Illinois. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, had one at March 24th at Illinois Wesleyan University, and U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, Democrat of Illinois, plans to have one Sunday at IWU. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a Taylorville Republican, whose district includes much of the Twin Cities, has said he doesn't hold town hall meetings, calling them grandstanding events. He said Wednesday he has always had that policy. The next story is headlined, "Lawyers Debate NPD Cops' Conduct in Beeman Case," by Edith Brady Lenny. Springfield. Lawyers for a Rockford man exonerated of the 1993 murder of an Illinois State University student argued Wednesday that three former Normal police officers deliberately hid evidence that could have helped prove his innocence and avoid 13 years in prison before his conviction was overturned. Alan Beeman, now 44, and his family were in Springfield at the 4th District Appellate Court for arguments in his appeal of the dismissal of his lawsuit against retired officers Tim Friesmeier, Dave Warner, and Frank Zayas. Beeman was convicted in 1994 of killing his former girlfriend, Jennifer Lockmiller, in her Normal apartment, but later exonerated by the Illinois Supreme Court, pardoned by then-Governor Pat Quinn, and given a certificate of innocence by the court. Speaking to the Pantograph as he entered the courthouse, Beeman said the legal battle to clear his name and hold police accountable for their alleged misconduct is not over. "I've been fighting these guys with my back foot forever, and I'm not about to quit now," said Beeman, swinging his leg backward. Beeman's McLean County lawsuit against the three former officers was dismissed last year by a Douglas County judge. The case was moved to another judicial circuit because retired McLean County judges Charles Reynard and James Suk were prosecutors during the investigation and trial. Chicago defense lawyer David Shapiro argued that the police theory of the time frame may have been disregarded by the jury had they known about a time trial conducted by Friesmeier that was supportive of Beeman's alibi. Police argued Beeman drove round-trip from Rockford to Normal within a 3.5-hour window established by a phone call he made and his mother's return home. Shapiro also accused police of withholding information related to a man whom the defense has described as a more viable suspect who failed to complete a lie detector test and did not have an alibi for the time Lockmiller was killed. The man had been romantically involved with Lockmiller, was owed money by her for drugs, and had a history of domestic violence, said Shapiro. The man has not been charged in connection with Lockmiller's death. In their questions to Shapiro, appellate judges Thomas Harris and James Knecht inquired about the legal issue of whether the actions taken by police had an impact on Suk, the prosecutor handling the case. Harris noted Suk denied such a connection during a deposition taken as part of a federal lawsuit filed by Beeman. Judge Robert Steigman was absent from arguments, but will have access to audio recordings and serve as the third judge to consider the appeal. Shapiro said prosecutors rely on police to conduct a fair investigation. If investigators believe more follow-up is needed before charges are filed, prosecutors should heed that advice, said Shapiro. In Beeman's case, one of Lockmiller's neighbors told police he heard footsteps outside her apartment at 2 p.m. the afternoon of her death, information that conflicts with the state's timeline for Beeman's travel to the murder scene. According to Shapiro, prosecutors ignored concerns from two detectives who asked for more time to follow up on leads. Thomas DiCiani, lawyer for the town of Normal, cautioned the appellate panel that the defense is trying to impose a new standard on police officers to openly question the prosecution of a case. Such a radical expansion of existing law is an issue for the Supreme Court or legislator, said DiCiani. The information unknown to the defense in the Beeman case was limited to the other potential suspect's polygraph, said DiCiani. When Suk was told about the polygraph years later, he said it would not have changed his view of the case, according to the town's attorney. Suk said the evidence of motive for Beeman was the strongest he'd ever seen. He felt the suspect named by the defense had no motive at all, according to DiCiani. The appellate court took Beeman's case under advisement. The next story is entitled Duckworth Town Hall Meeting Set for IWU by Pantograph Staff. Bloomington. U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth will have a town hall meeting from 2 to 3:30 p.m. Sunday at Illinois Wesleyan University's Hanson Student Center. Doors will open at 1 p.m., but entry cannot be guaranteed without a ticket. Free tickets can be obtained at www.eventbrite.com or through a link on pantograph.com. No food, drinks, promotional materials, or signs of any kind will be permitted at the meeting. Duckworth, a Democrat who served two terms in the U.S. House of Representatives, was elected to the U.S. Senate in November. Before being elected to Congress in 2012, the Army veteran served as director of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs and, later, Assistant Secretary for Public and Intergovernmental Affairs in the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Duckworth's counterpart, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, had a town hall meeting at IWU in March. Here's an article entitled, ISU Investment Rating Under Review. Officials Confident About Retaining Current Numbers, by Lenore Sabota. Normal. Moody's Investment Service is reviewing Illinois State University and five other schools for a possible credit rating downgrade, but university officials are confident ISU can retain its current rating. Moody's said the review was prompted by the state's failure to enact a budget providing full operating funding to the university for the current fiscal year. The review affects about $2.2 billion of public university debt, according to an announcement from Moody's. Greg Ault, retiring vice president for finance and planning at ISU, said Wednesday, "We feel confident we'll hold the rating." Ault said Moody's reviews universities regularly, but it's just a little more formal review this time. The rating affects both existing debt and future debt. If ISU's rating is downgraded, the cost of borrowing money is higher, said Ault. The university is not doing any capital projects requiring new debt, he said, and funding is already in place for the planned Bone Student Center renovation. However, Ault said, we're beginning work on refinancing the Cardinal Court project. We would like to proceed with that by fall. A downgrade would impact that, but Ault emphasized, we'd still be able to issue debt. We're still investment grade. ISU has a rating of Baa1 for Auxiliary Facilities System Revenue Bonds and Baa2 for Certificates of Participation. The Auxiliary Facilities Bonds received a higher rating because they involve restricted funds for residential and athletics facilities, Ault explained. The certificates are covered by general revenue, which is more affected by state funding. Among the state's public universities, only the University of Illinois has a higher rating from Moody's than ISU. The U of I is part of the review announced Monday, as are Eastern Illinois, Southern Illinois, Northern Illinois, and Governor State Universities. Northeastern Illinois University's certificates of participation were downgraded from Baa2 to B1 on Monday by Moody's. The review will include budgeted fiscal 2018 operations and assumptions and an assessment of near-term debt service commitments against pledged revenues and related reserves, according to Moody's. Some schools could see their ratings drop by more than one notch, depending on liquidity and ongoing ability to adjust to the prolonged lack of state operating funding, Moody's said. Ault's optimism about ISU's rating relates to its steady enrollment and contingency plans the university has developed, even if state funding is delayed or reduced, he said. We're able to demonstrate how we're managing the situation, said Ault. The next story is entitled, Prosecutors Defend Use of Shock Staffer Turned Informant, by Michael Tarm. Chicago. Federal prosecutors deny investigators overstepped legal lines by recruiting a confidential informant from former U.S. Representative Aaron Schock's staff to help build a corruption case against him, accusing the Republican of seeking to manufacture claims of governmental misconduct to escape prosecution. In the same government court filing, prosecutors also raised the prospect that the former Illinois congressman sought to tamper with a witness and urged the person to change grand jury testimony while the investigation was ongoing. Schock, 35, resigned in March 2015 amid scrutiny over lavish spending, including to redecorate his Washington office in the style of the TV series Downton Abbey. His attorneys have accused agents of violating Schock's constitutional right against unreasonable search and seizure, including by pressing the staffer-turned-informant to secretly record Schock and other co-workers. In a sharply worded response filed just before midnight Tuesday in U.S. District Court in Springfield, prosecutors say investigators spelled out clearly to the informant what the person legally could and couldn't do, including prohibiting the person from initiating discussions about legislative matters. Schock futilely attempts to manufacture claims of governmental misconduct during the course of the investigation, the 60-page filing says. It downplays the importance of documents the informant secured, saying investigators relied primarily on other sources to form the core of the case. Schock has pleaded not guilty to theft of government funds and other crimes included in his 2016 indictment. Mark Hubbard, a spokesman for Schock's legal team, declined direct comment on the new government filing, saying only, "We feel the motions we filed before the court speak for themselves." The defense filing in March said the informant provided the government with a trove of emails, receipts, and other documents, sometimes after rifling through staffers' desks, asserting that some of the material should be regarded as stolen property. Schock's attorney also accused the FBI of using the informant to sidestep restrictions on what a federal agent can search and seize. Defense lawyers made clear they would follow up soon with a motion to dismiss the case by citing, among other things, alleged prosecutorial misconduct. Prosecutors also dispute defense claims that the government has withheld vital evidence as Schock's attorneys prepare for trial, which is scheduled to begin July 10th. Prosecutors say that includes wiretap recordings, law enforcement reports, and grand jury witness transcripts. Prosecutors say agents first made contact with the informant in March 2015, just weeks after the investigation started. It said the informant voluntarily offered office documents, then later agreed to wear a wire. Here's a story headlined, "Davis LaHood Celebrate Route 66. Congressman Tout Proposed Legislation to Commemorate Road," by Derek Bay. Tawanda. Local, state, and federal officials united on Route 66 in McLean County on Wednesday to celebrate the history and future of the road. At a ribbon-cutting event for the Route 66 bike trail, a project led by county government to build a multi-use trail from Chenoa to McLean, Republican U.S. Representatives Rodney Davis of Taylorville and Darren LaHood of Dunlap spoke about their pending legislation to commemorate and improve the historic highway as it approaches its centennial in 2026. Another local Route 66 project, a town-owned historic site at the former Sprague's service station at 305 Pine Street in Normal, is under interior and exterior renovation and could open in May, said City Manager Mark Peterson. The trail, built with local, state, and federal support, now stretches 15.4 miles from Bloomington Normal beyond Shirley to the south and beyond Tawanda to the north, of a planned 37.2 miles, with extensions to an existing trail in Lexington and to Fox Grove in the pipeline. Old Route 66 stretches about 50 miles across the county, and officials envision a historic Route 66 bike trail running 370 miles from Chicago to the state line. The Illinois Department of Transportation has covered 80% of previous trail projects through grants. Davis said his proposal, House Resolution 66, is in the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. The bill would create a 19-member commission to plan centennial events and also would commission a Route 66 preservation plan developed by states on the road. You say, well, 2026 is a ways away. Well, D.C. should start planning now because sometimes we have a problem getting things done before they reach the crisis spot, he said. We're trying to get people to think about what it means to have a celebration worthy of such an historic road. LaHood said his proposal to make Route 66 a National Historic Trail is in the House Natural Resources Committee. That designation could bring federal funding to preserve and improve the road. We think this is a win for our local community, and it's a win for our country to do this, he said of the designation. State Representative Tim Butler, Republican of Springfield, also spoke about his bill in the General Assembly to establish a state-level centennial commission. It's important that we plan for the future of Route 66, and I'm glad that our folks on the federal level have taken it up as well, he said. It's the most famous road in the world. During his remarks Wednesday, State Representative Dan Brady, Republican of Bloomington, encouraged residents and visitors to go to the McLean County Museum of History in downtown Bloomington for its Route 66 history, including an exhibit. Wednesday's event was at Boyd Wesley Park in Towanda. Davis, LaHood, and Butler visited the Palms Grill Cafe in Atlanta and Rail Splitter Covered Wagon in Lincoln earlier in the day as part of a two-day Route 66 tour. The next article is entitled, Fritzen Lashes Out at Reckless Campaign Tactics, by Derek Bay. Normal. Normal City Council member Jeff Fritzen lashed out Wednesday at what he called reckless, irresponsible, and indefensible tactics in this spring's campaign for mayor and council. While his 10-page statement, read aloud at a City Hall news conference, did not name mayoral challenger Mark Tiratilli, Fritzen spent much of the speech, which he called a Town of Normal finance presentation, rebutting specific claims made by Tiratilli in his campaign against incumbent mayor Chris Koos. Among them, whether it's normal for a town to have so much debt, what a AAA bond rating means, if tax increment financing districts are necessary for development, how the town is handling pension payments, how much the town is investing in streets, whether public-private partnerships are effective, and whether Normal is overtaxed. Fritzen said not only that he disagreed with what was said on those subjects during the campaign, Fritzen endorsed Koos, but also that those statements used information that was false and deliberately misleading. This is not resentment about Normal's finances or the policies established by the council, he said. The reckless, irresponsible, and indefensible attack on Normal's strengths was misleading to the electorate and damaging to the town's brand. It doesn't build us up, it destroys, and, while common in state and congressional races, has no place in local government. Tiratilli could not be reached for a response on Wednesday. Fritzen noted neither the town staff nor Koos asked him to make the speech. The impetus behind today is my personal offense to what I believe was a campaign to win office without regard to the consequences, he said. Sometimes candidates resort to presenting facts in less than complete context in order to create issues that plant seeds of doubt among the electorate. Fritzen said he did not feel his statement was premature, despite a pending recount process that still could put Tiratilli in the mayor's office. Koos was declared the winner of their race Tuesday by only 11 votes, with 97 undervotes and overvotes, ballots which were not counted because the voter appeared to have chosen neither or both candidates, recorded. Fritzen said in his statement that it was not an attempt to explain away the close result in the mayor's race, and in fact he thought about it before the April 4th election, though he said it was fair to conclude he believes the close race reflects dirty tactics more than residents hungry for change. Fritzen has served on the council since 1983, except for a 4-year break starting in 1999. He opposed Kuss for mayor in 2005, but narrowly lost. As the longest-serving representative of the citizens of Normal, I believe it my duty to reassure those whose trust in their elected officials and professional staff had been diminished, he said. Examining the facts completely, not selectively, is a step towards restoration. And here's a story entitled Earth Day Celebration to Honor Lincoln Professor by Pantograph Staff. Lincoln. Guided nature walks, a free native plant giveaway, live music, and children's activities will all be part of Saturday's Earth Day celebration at Lincoln College's Environmental Center. The college also will take the opportunity to officially rename the center in honor of Professor Dennis Campbell, a driving force behind the center, who has taught at Lincoln College for more than 2 decades. It's not only appropriate that the Creekside Center be named in honor of Dr. Campbell, but it is especially appropriate that we have scheduled the renaming ceremony for Earth Day, said Lincoln College President David Gerlach. To be known as the Dennis Campbell Creekside Outdoor Center for Environmental Education, the facility includes the restored Gossett Tall Grass Prairie, the Peoples of the Past Boardwalk, an insectarium, greenhouse, and native plants. The boardwalk includes a log cabin that was moved to the site last year from behind Jefferson Elementary School. The first phase covers 800 years of history, going back in time from the pioneers to the Kickapoo and Mississippian Native American cultures. Nature trails lead to points of interest, including the place along Sugar Creek where Illinois' largest woolly mammoth fossil was found in 2005. That find helped trigger Campbell's interest in developing a site where he not only could bring students to do research, but also where young children to retirees could learn of the area's archaeological, biological, and geographical importance. In addition to the mammoth fossil, Native American artifacts also have been found in the area. The Earth Day celebration will be from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The renaming ceremony will start the day's activity. There will be a children's story time in the forest, games, crafts, and a science of ice cream making demonstration that will include free tasting. Local craft vendors will be present, along with tables displaying rocks, fossils, and artifacts. Gerlach noted that Campbell has worked with the community, Lincoln Rotarians, students, faculty, staff, and others on the 4-acre site, located about 5 miles north of Lincoln, at 1234 County Road 2000 North. To get there, take Interstate 55, exit 133 toward Lincoln. Turn left onto North Lincoln Parkway and go 3 miles. Turn right on 1250th Avenue, Nicholson Road, traveling 3.1 miles. Turn left on 2000th Street, the second left after Kickapoo Creek, and go a half mile. Turn right on a gravel road marked Small Edwards Trace that leads to Creekside. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for April 20th. Please stay tuned.